it's not about what's right and what's wrong with art. In art, we don't do this is right, that's wrong. What we do is this works, this doesn't work.
Welcome to the Passionate Painter Podcast. I'm your host, Caroline Italia Carlson. Whether your art is a full-time career or your side gig, if you are passionate about creating art, this podcast is for you. Don't worry about taking notes. I'll do that for you. And you can find them at PassionatePainterPodcast.com. Welcome to episode 90. On one hand, it's hard to believe I've been at this for over 3 years now. On the other hand, it's hard for me to remember life without podcasting. Heartfelt thanks to you, my listeners, who inspire me to keep showing up. This show really is for you. Today, I'm happy to share my interview with internationally renowned painter, illustrator, children's book author, actor, musician, and nonstop creative, Mark Sciascia. This fearless, multi-passionate creative is very comfortable in the limelight. This interview offers inspiration, encouragement, and actionable, tough love advice. Mark knows who he is and has a terrific knack for communicating his boundaries to clients that I think we can all learn from. His enthusiasm is contagious, and hanging out with him was a true privilege. The interview ran over an hour, so I've broken it into two episodes for listening convenience. Be sure to check out part two to learn about marketing your work, getting into and working with galleries, Mark's biggest struggle as an artist, and so much more. Part two is available now at PassionatePainterPodcast.com/episode 91. And don't forget, you can see the complete video of this interview in the show notes for either part one or part two, as well as a slideshow of Mark's work and links to his website and valuable video courses. Don't forget to join my podcast Insider Circle for free downloadable ebooks, cheat sheets, and checklists exclusively for my podcast insiders and students. You'll also receive a reusable coupon for the lowest price available on all of my self-paced online courses. Sign up for free in the sidebar at PassionatePainterPodcast.com. Mark Sciascia is an award-winning American artist, author, and educator, and one of the busiest plein air painters today, working in all corners of the country at major plein air events, from the forgotten coast of Florida to Laguna Beach, California. Millions have read his children's books, which he has written and illustrated, such as Night of the Moon Jellies, published by Simon & Schuster. His work is found in galleries, museums, and private collections around the world. Sciascia's popular tutorial videos and workshops have helped thousands of students master elements of landscape and seascape painting. Sciascia is a signature member of the American Society of Marine Artists, Laguna Plein Air Painters Association, and the Copley Society. He is an elected member of esteemed art institutions, including the Salmagundi Club and the Guild of Boston Artists. Recent art awards include the Museum Purchase Award in San Angelo, Texas, the Montanaro Gallery Award at the National Exhibition of Rockport Art Association and Museum, and Artist Choice Award at Plein Air Easton. Book awards include the Marion Vinette Ridgway Award. Education awards include the Shining Star Award for his work with more than 200,000 children. When not painting, Mark is an actor and singer, playing stage roles as diverse as Atticus Finch and Willy Wonka. He lives in Swampscott, Massachusetts. Mark, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you. Glad to be here.
I am very fortunate to have a chance to talk with you and find out all about your incredible career. And I would love to start us off with hearing about your background and your journey to becoming a full-time artist.
Oh, well, I'll give you the summary, which is when I was a kid, I had stories in my head and I wanted to draw them all out. And I drew the stories out and they were dinosaurs and they were pictures of me saving the girls that I had crushes on, which was a lot of them. And I I just got into really storytelling. And I needed to draw the pictures to kind of satisfy me. I just had to see them. And I used to have, I'd go to my grandmother's house, and you know those old shoe boxes. I used to cut a little hole out the top and put two pencils and cut holes in the side. Anyway, make a little movie for myself where I would tape a strip of construction paper and do like a little storyboard. And as I turned the pencils, it would wind up in the pencil.
I did the same thing.
Did you?
Yeah.
So you know what I'm talking about. I thought I was weird.
No, we're both weird.
Yeah, it was. Well, I loved doing those. And I would make my little storyboards and I'd have a little movie and I'd draw the little pictures. And then you could turn the pencil and I'd have a whole new picture in my little window there. I thought I invented this. I did this when I was like 5 years old. And anyway, I'm not going to give you the... This is already taking too long.
No, you're fine.
Some summary. I was interested in art, and my art teacher in high school kind of said, you got to go to art school. And I didn't really want to do that. I didn't want to go to art school, but I applied to the Rhode Island School of Design as one of my colleges. And I actually thought I was going to go off to be an engineer along with my girlfriend at the time in high school, because, you know, I wasn't thinking through anything except, you know, I was in love with her. So wherever she's going. And it turned out that I didn't get accepted to the school she was going to. And we broke up anyway, but she broke up with me. So that's another story. That's how I got into the Rhode Island School of Design. And I went to college there, Providence, Rhode Island. And 1,000 stories that I, you know, don't have time for. But one of them was, I realized that I really loved drawing, and I wanted to be an illustrator after all and tell stories. And this is the continuum. All right. So I wanted to tell stories. I had Chris Van Allsburg for a teacher who did the Polar Express and Jumanji and all this stuff. And that was quite an inspiring experience, because I realized here's a guy who was telling stories and drawing, and he was his own maestro. He didn't have to work with other people. I mean, I'm not a very good collaborator. I don't do well with others. I'm very independent. We can talk about that separately, but I just have a fundamental disagreement with following orders or so. At the Rhode Island School of Design, I was inspired to write my own children's books. And of course I did that. And I had Simon & Schuster published this one many years ago, and it's still in print, and it's occasionally a bestseller in the summer. The Night of the Moon Jellies. Yeah, I loved my experience in publishing. Gosh, there's so many stories, Caroline, but the short, I keep making this too long.
No, you're fine.
I skip ahead a little bit here. I became an illustrator. I became a storyteller, and I went to schools, hundreds of schools, and I read to children. This was while my kids are stay-at-home dad, and I'd go off to a school, and my wife had a full-time job. She's the one that can follow instructions. And I just went to schools, and I read my books to children, and I did other things. I sang songs. I played guitar and wrote songs and told stories and had a great time. But eventually, once I had done enough of that, I realized I didn't want to publish any more children's books. I was done with that. I just wanted to paint. And around 1998, I guess, I decided to just go full bore into just the painting. I had always been painting. It's not like I, you know, started. I've always been a painter, always telling stories with pictures, always doing many other things. I mean, the art is the only thing I've ever done of one kind or another. And so that's really it. I just started painting full time about 25 years ago, and I've just never stopped. There's too much missing there.
Well, once you started painting full time, then, you know, our listeners, of course, have all different backgrounds, but they're wondering, how did you support yourself? How did you make it a regular income thing where it just had that regular money flow that allows them to get the groceries and pay the bills? And
well, I've never been a good business person. I'm afflicted with the problem of not caring very much about where the money comes from. And that has been a frustration on occasion, but I just never cared. I know this sounds nutty, but let me put it also, hey, I got lucky. I married a spectacularly beautiful, accomplished woman who had her own dreams. And when we were young, we got married. We were in our 20s, and you know, she went off and did her thing. When we had kids, I was drawing at home, coming up with story ideas. I had a million things: singing songs, playing a lot of guitar, and painting. Always painting something. And I took care of the kids. I was a stay-at-home dad, you know. And so I supported her when she had her full-time job. And that her full-time job enabled us to have insurance for the kids, enabled us to pay the rent, enabled us to save a little money. And then as the kids got old enough for me to get out and do my thing, that's around the time that Night of the Moon Jellies was taking off. I mean, I was always making money. It just happened. I mean, I am a tenacious person. I'm very stubborn. I'm very tenacious. I mean, there's I don't know how many people I've run into in my life, hundreds of people who said, well, I always wanted to publish a children's book. How do you do that? How do you get an agent? How did you do that? Well, when I was 28, I genuinely didn't care who I called and what I said. I remember, this is a picture of how tenacious I am. I wanted to publish a children's book. I had been an illustrator in Boston for like 5 years, ever since I got out of college in 1983. And I wanted to be an illustrator. So I was illustrating for the Boston Phoenix and the Globe and doing spot work for, you know, I don't know, Rolling Stone or whatever I could get my work in. And so I just got to a point where I said, no, I have to be, I just have to get this book published. And I just went to New York. Who does this? I went to New York with my portfolio in my hand, got off the train, didn't have enough money to get in a cab. For some reason, I had money, but I couldn't find it or something. And a couple of guys in a black limousine said, where are you going? I said, I'm going uptown. and they let me ride with them. And I remember going, they dropped me off on Madison Avenue. And I just got out, said, thank you very much. Had a nice talk. I remember their look in their eyes when I was, I mean, here I am, this 28-year-old kid, and I'm looking at these two older gentlemen who are giving me a ride to up Madison Avenue. And in their limo, and they're looking at, they said, so what are you in town for? I said, well, I'm going to go and get my book published. And it's like, it was really like out of a movie, you know, like, oh, I'm going to go to New York and I want to make it big time. So I got out of the limo. I had my portfolio and they wished me luck. And I went off and I just walked up and down. I went Farrar, Straus and Giroux, you know, Simon & Schuster, all the publishers. There were so many in those days. And I would just walk in. I walked right into the office. And I would say, hello, I'm here to see the art director. Do you have an appointment? I said, no, but I'm here now. And believe it or not, that's how I got my first real conversation with a publisher. And it happened that week. I was in town for a couple of days. I've been to New York a lot. I grew up in New London, Connecticut, so I wasn't afraid of being in New York, but I don't have any fear when it comes to my tenacity. And I'm not afraid to call anyone, talk to anyone. I have no concern about, I'm not worried about that. I just, the biggest fear that I have is I always want to make sure that I've done the best I can. If I don't do the best I can and then it flops, that's where something hurts inside.
Because then it's on you.
Oh, it's got to be on me. Because, you know, I don't feel any reward for doing something for somebody else. If I make someone else happy, I love that. I love to make people happy. But I can't do it as a job. And I've only recently figured this out. I can't read people's minds. I can't figure out what they really want, you know, and they'll say, well, you know, will you paint my dog? Well, yeah, I could, but I don't know. What are you seeing in your dog? Like, I don't know what you're seeing. I can't. Is it in the eyes? Is it in the expression? Is there something about your dog? Is there a memory you have? Oh, well, you know, it's just my dog. No, it's not just your dog. That's why you want a painting of it. It's more than your dog. You want something special, and I don't know what it is. I can't figure that out. I'm no good at that. I'm sorry to say.
So you don't do commissions?
Well, I do commissions. I'll tell you how I do them. I don't know if you'll ever talk to another artist who will tell you how. I mean, this is the strangest. I'll just tell you. Look, I'm out painting one day a Marblehead. I don't do commissions. So here's what happened. I'm out painting in Marblehead, which is the next town up from me, north.
It's my mom's family's from Boston.
Oh, you know what I'm talking. You know
they're from Haverhill, so.
Okay, you know what I'm talking. So it's this beautiful coastal town, and I'm painting a scene. This is about, I'm going to say, about 17 years ago, maybe 15. And I'm liking my painting. It's one of those days. It's going well. And a man comes up to me and says, I really love that painting. First question he asked was, how do you know when you're done? Yeah. I said, well, the way I know is by the time I've ruined it, I know I'm done.
Oh, yeah. You've gone too far.
Yeah, I've gone too far. So that's kind of my quip. It's it's not really an answer because I don't know the answer.
Well, I'll scratch that one off your questions list.
Yeah. And the other thing is, so he said, do you ever do commissions? I said, well, not really, but what do you have in mind? And he said, well, I've got a house. It's down by the water. We just spent $2 million on the grounds. It used to be the old DuPont estate in these beautiful rose gardens and koi ponds and stuff. And I refurbished all that. It's a beautiful house. I'd love you to come and paint the house. So I said, listen, no promises. Here's what I'll do. You tell me where you live. I'll go there. I'll look around. If I see a painting, I'll paint it if I want to. And if I paint something and I feel good about it, I'll call you and I'll invite you to my studio and you can buy it or not. It's up to you. There's no obligation here. But if you don't want it, you have to allow me to sell it to someone else, no question asked.
Very good.
And how do you feel about that? Now, see, the whole thing there is Mark's in charge, right?
Yeah, you switched the power paradigm right away.
Well, there's nobody. I don't owe anybody anything. If it doesn't work out, I don't owe anybody. So he says, all right, come to my house. And I went to his house. Breathtaking. Absolutely. It's right on the water. It's still there. It's a gorgeous home. Pillars, I don't know how many rooms, big, beautiful thing. And he comes up, he says, all right, this is what I want you to paint. And he stands me in front of the house and he aims me right at the front. So there's no ocean to the right. There's no flowers to the nothing. It's just the house.
You're like, forget
and
it.
And I'm thinking to myself, this is why I cannot do commissions. This guy doesn't see anything about how to approach this painting. But I know that I'm seeing paintings everywhere.
Yes.
So he said, look, come out anytime you want, park your car. Turns out I ended up doing 8 paintings. It took me about 3 months. I called him up. I said, Brian, I've got something for you to see. If you want it, come and look. If you don't want it, it's absolutely fine with me. I'm around on Thursday night if you want to drop in. He came in and you know, the rest of the story is he bought all of them.
Now, were you showing up plein air to paint on site or were you taking photos and going back to your studio?
Oh, I did not use photos. No, I was showing up plein air on site and I was painting, but he's never there. He runs a franchise and he is the busiest guy in the world. So he's never on his property. In fact, one time he said he envied me because I spent more time on his property than he did. But, you know, I was out there in the garden. He had a gardener named Rick. And a cute little dog that was running around, and he had koi ponds. He had statues he had brought from Italy. This was the most beautiful rose gardens I have ever seen. And so, of course, I saw paintings everywhere. And there, he was under no obligation to buy any of it, but he bought all of it. And the one painting that I threw in for fun, just I didn't charge him for it, was the one that he asked me for, which was the house, just the house. I just threw that in as a gift.
Wow. See, I'm not drawn to architectural paintings because they're so right angle and so particular, you know, it has to be so like, how long does that take you to do the whole house?
Oh gosh, it was just, it wasn't that complicated at all, because he had, his vision was, I painted his vision, which was just a
simple,
you know, a simple rectangle. But in the ones that where I, my inspiration, I wish I had some I could show you. It was all, you know, the house is to the right, but the water is over here, the beach, the roses are spilling out over the edge of the seawall.
Yes.
You know, it's, there's so many other things in the painting. The house, you know, you have to be accurate with that, but you don't, I don't remember it being very particularly complicated. It's, you got to draw your straight lines, and I have tools for that. I, you know, use a ruler or something to get the straight line. Not afraid of straight lines. I'm more afraid of the organic stuff, getting that right.
Okay. See, I get really bored of the inorganics. It depends on what it is, but when it's a building, sometimes I get, it depends on how painterly I can get with it.
Okay.
That's funny, it's though.
It's interesting that you said that, because I have found that I have never been bored. I'm almost never bored. When I'm, because I'm very inner motivated, like everything I do is from my heart, everything I'm doing.
Yes.
And I recommend that to artists. Find out what you love and just do that. And so if I can think of the story behind the picture, I'm never bored. There's no part of the picture that bores me. There can be challenges, difficulties in, like, how do I handle this really dark part of the picture? Or, you know, how do I get this right? But I'm almost never bored. I've been blessed with incredible energy for artistic expression. And if I'm not acting in a play or singing in a band or playing my guitar or painting, you know, I'll be writing poetry, or I'll be just daydreaming, walking the beach. It really doesn't stop. There's no way to turn it off, I've found.
Yeah, no, there isn't. I'm the same way with multimedia, and either I'm at the digital design end, or I'm in my studio, or I'm at the mic or editing video. It comes out no matter what you're doing. You're finding ways to express yourself.
Yeah.
The way not to get bored for me is to definitely, as you mentioned, choose your assignments and the angle at which you come at them. Mm-hmm. And I end up, I don't advertise it too much, but I end up doing a lot of posthumous portraits. And that can be hard, and that you've never met the person or the pet.
Yeah.
But if I can get a sense of who the person was, I find that they definitely work for me. And I don't, it's almost like I'm connecting with something that I'm not meeting the person, but somehow if I can connect with who I feel that that person was, that it works. So that's an interesting kind of angle, but it definitely has to come through your perspective and your lens so that you can set it up the way that works for your energy, like you do with, you say, you know, you kind of set the ground rules for all that work. And then, of course, it comes through in the work, and he bought everything that you painted.
Yeah. Yeah. I've had other similar things happen with commissions. I just don't do them. I don't look forward to a commission.
Yeah.
I mean, if I get roped into something where it's like that kind of situation, as happy as an ending as that was.
Yeah.
I still don't want to do it. I'd rather do my own thing.
Yeah. Well, and I can appreciate that. And I almost wonder, from a marketing standpoint, if saying what you said about, hey, you know, you have to sign off on this, that if you don't buy it, I can sell a picture of your house to someone else. You wonder if that had anything to do, if that will motivate the buyer to think, well, you know, at theme parks, they do that, and it's not really a good analogy, but in other words, they take your picture, and if you don't want it, you know, you have to leave it there.
Well, that's a little bit of a shakedown, you know. So
it is.
I don't want to do that to people.
No,
see, everything. If I that's too injurious. I would rather, which is why it matters to me so much.
You're coming from the heart.
I really care about people, and I want to make them happy. And
yes,
if there's my only reason for not doing commissions is because I don't know how to make them happy. I mean, I can make me happy, and very often that leads them to be happy. So that works out, you know.
Commissions definitely require the compromise. I find for me, it's a frustration of, if the person has given me a photo that I feel, if I have five photos and one of them is really not optimal and they want that photo.
Yeah.
and the lighting's bad.
God, yeah.
Or it's one of them was blurry and I had to kind of make a composite, and it was a very difficult. But I found what I did for that assignment was that I found my motivation in the fact that it was very clear, no matter how blurry this photo was, that if I could get something the person would approve, that they would be just thrilled, even though I would kind of be like afraid to look at it. That was what they wanted. And I've had several, especially posthumous. They'll be like, this is the photo I want, because it meant something to the person getting it.
See, I think that's great. That's wonderful that you can. I envy your ability to do that. See, I'll tell you the one. Here's the, like, the commission to end all commissions. I mean, this was just, a friend of a friend. And those are the hardest ones to put down. Those are the hardest ones to say no to.
Yes.
A friend of a friend said, listen, Mark, I've got these two granddaughters, grandkids, and I want paintings of them, and I want you to do them. He was very direct, and this was about 6 years ago. And I, unlike you, I don't like doing portraits from photos at all. Oh, my God. Oh, please. I have to have the person with me. It's just not going to work otherwise. So I have to do it from life. So if I'm going to do a portrait, which is why I don't do very many portraits. But anyway, he sends me these two photographs, and they are the crappiest photos you could imagine of these kids. You couldn't really tell who, like, the lighting was horrible. The
light's blown out.
Position. There was one of them had a rose right in his face like this. So the kid had a rose just covering. I looked at them. I said, listen, I can't do this. I can't do honor to your grandkids. Mark, you don't understand. I want you to do these. Friend of a friend. I said, all right, well, here's the deal. The only way I can do these is if I do these, I call you when I'm done. And when I deliver them, you will have a check for me. The check will be this amount. And you will not be able to, I will not change anything. I am delivering to you the best I can do. If my signature is on the canvas, it's done. How's that? Does that work for you? And he said, sure. Now, with that level of flexibility, I could have brought him a painting of Gumby and left it out with him, and he'd have to pay me.
Did he stick to it?
Absolutely. I went in, I brought the two paintings. I hated the paintings. I'm not going to tell you who I painted because I don't want anyone to see them. Because my signature is on them, they are not failures as far as paintings go. I succeeded in making a respectable painting, but I didn't like them in the end, okay? I know how to make a painting work, and these paintings worked. He paid me. I took the check, but it felt like dirty money. It was a lot of money, but it felt like dirty money, and I didn't like it. I didn't feel good. And if I don't feel good, guess what? I'm a sensitive guy. That costs me more than the money I win. Like, right. I can't, like, I'm, you can see that I'm not happy with how I can't hide my feelings. And so I'm really bad at that. So I just, you know, does that make sense? I run away from commissions. I don't see the point in them. I mean, and the other thing is, I have an incredibly full agenda. My schedule is absolutely bonkers. I have 8 galleries around the country. I have to send paintings to 8 galleries. I mean, you know, think about that. So you got 7 or 8 paintings per gallery. Let's say 10 paintings per gallery. That's a lot. That's
per month?
No. This is in a year.
Okay.
I look at the year and I see it. I see my art life as what's the year ahead look like? And I've got 8 galleries. So I want to send, 5 to this gallery. Eventually, I want to get 8 to this one. I want to get, 15 to that one, that kind of thing. And you end up looking like, you look at the situation, you're like, well, at some point, I've got to deliver at least 80 paintings this year to the galleries. That's just for the galleries. That's not for my own shows, and I try to have a solo show every year. And my solo show is going to be this year. If I do one, it'll be in California at my gallery in Balboa. But I don't know. I may not get to it. I have two. And for a solo show, you want to have 20 paintings, and they all have to be the best you can do all the time. And then you have workshops and, you know, you've got to prepare there. I do videos with Streamline and if I can do it, I do some acting. I played Atticus Finch in To Kill a Mockingbird a couple of years ago. That took months of my life, you know.
I bet.
I write music and sing songs, and I don't have a boring minute. It's one thing after another, and I travel all over the place. I think I'm going to be in 10 different towns this year. And so I also try to say, here, one more thing. I like to say yes to everything.
Yeah.
If a question, you know, I like to say yes to every question. So if I can work it in, I'll try to do it. And I said yes to two very exciting things last year. And it looks like I'm going to try to say yes to them again this year. One last year was my friend Kathleen, who invited me to paint in the edge of a desert. She rented a house in Utah, and we joined seven other great painters. Oh my God, they were good. I mean, you know, some names you'd of course know. And we just painted that whole week in the desert in Utah, every day bringing back these paintings to the house. Imagine 20 paintings a day are brand new on the walls, and we're just looking at them and studying them and asking each other about how did you get that red of that rock and stuff. Oh my God, it was so exciting. And another trip was similar to Tuscany to paint in Cortona. And that was 2 weeks of, you know, sheer magic, just going out and painting with some of my friends. And it's a million stories. But anyway, I digress.
No, it's good. And it lines up with all my questions. I mean, I want to know, how do, you know, our listeners are listening to this prolific career. So how do you get 8 galleries, and how do you end up getting tapped for Streamline and ending up on the roll of these trips with these other fabulous artists? How does this magic happen? Is this evolution? Yes.
Nope, just say yes to your heart. Follow your heart, say yes. I know that sounds glib, but let me try to clarify it and put a few more words around that.
Please do, because I just did an episode where I told my listeners, say no. Say no to everything that's not important.
Well, no, you say yes to the things that are important, and just don't do I don't focus on the things I say no to, because I've said yes to something else. So, for example, how did I get in all these galleries? Well, first of all, let's be clear. Paint very, very well. Be a good painter. And you should put some effort into that. Constantly study art. Go to museums with friends who love art and talk about what's good about paintings. Talk about what's bad about some paintings. Talk about what you love. Talk about what you don't love. Go to the artists that you love and keep studying them. Look at their work. And gosh, wow, that's how I learned. I loved Norman Rockwell when I was a kid. I tried to copy his work. I loved a lot of the great illustrators, Maxfield Parrish, you know, the usual suspects, Andrew Wyeth. Studying how these artists and reading about how these artists approach their work, that's all part of it. It helped also that I went to art school. I mean, I went to one of the great art schools, I think, in the world. I mean, RISD was a magical place. And, you know, RISD was not a place where, and I'll talk for hours about my RISD life, but one of the great things, and I didn't learn it until years later, RISD doesn't teach you how to be an artist. RISD teaches you, or a good art school teaches you, how to think like an artist. Thinking like an artist is not being an artist. Thinking like an artist is solving problems as they come up and trying to think your way around them. How do I solve this problem? And also understanding that it's not about what's right and what's wrong with art. In art, we don't do this is right, that's wrong. What we do is this works, this doesn't work. That's the difference. And once you open your mind to that and say, okay, this might not, you know, be what I thought, but it works, you know? It's like Jackie Gleason said, if you think you got it, but you don't got it, you got it. You know, it's like, it's your approach. And if you put your life into it and your love into it, you will find it. Now, more practical advice. For God's sake, join an art association. If you're not a member of your local art association, find an art association that's nearby and be a member. It's absolutely crucial. Why do I say this? First of all, you have a place to hang your work. Secondly, you have a place to talk to other people who are like-minded. And believe it or not, you're going to find people who can teach you something who you wouldn't expect. You'll find somebody who likes to look at art who could give you a good critique, and that's worth its weight in gold. Three, it's a place where you could do a solo show. If you're a member, most of these art associations, all you got to do is sign up to do a solo show in, say, a year. You might have to wait a year, but you get to show your work. And why does that matter? That's why you're doing it. That's why you're painting. You not just, maybe it's for you and just for you. And if so, stay home and paint, enjoy your work. And that's a good life too. There's nothing wrong with painting for yourself. But if you want to paint and show your work because you want to share your feelings about how you feel about the world, then you got to show your work. I mean, that's for me, I can't stop expressing. And why do I express? Because I feel it and I want to connect. Art is about connecting to people. That's why I do it. I want
the same way.
I want to show my work to people. I have a passion for, please, let's go on this journey together. Look at this painting with me. Look at this little world that I've found. And then when they look and they see something of their own in their own heart that lights up, that's what gives me joy. That's the connection. So it's love. It's basically the four bohemian principles. You know, that's what I live by, which is love, truth, freedom, and beauty. That's what I live by. And I don't have a religion. I long ago left religion, but that is as close to religion as I have. I believe in love. I believe in truth and beauty and freedom. I mean, art is about freedom too. What do I mean by that? Think of what happens when you become a master at something. There becomes like, there's almost no filter between you and what you create. You're totally free to express yourself. Once you understand that art is about that, it's about pure liberation. The freedom to be everything that you can be in a creative way and just keep doing it. Live the joy of that. And a lot of things fall into place. Now, if you join an art association, am I talking too much? Correct me.
No, keep going. You're perfect.
I'm just saying, if you join an art association, you're going to get a place to connect to other people and you'll begin making those connections. And you start moving other people and they'll care about your work if you're good. And if you're getting better, always ask yourself, what can I do to get better at this? You know, what am I doing that? I did a show once at a college and I had this whole book of reviews. The kids were coming in and just like, oh, it's so wonderful. All the light is great. Oh, it's beautiful. Look at how does Mark paint all this light and blah, blah. But you know, the review that caught me, the bad one. Somebody said, these are just a bunch of nature paintings. There's nothing else to them. They're just pretty little nature paintings. And you know what? I don't get angry when I read that. No, 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 no. I'm taking that to heart. I'm thinking, okay, well, maybe I've posted all these paintings in this show. And, you know, there aren't a lot of people. There aren't a lot of stories being told. Maybe these are too many little vignettes of tide pools and vignettes of, you know, little nooks and crannies. And yeah, there's a passion in it for me. I wouldn't have painted it otherwise, but I'm not reading and no one's seeing, this particular person isn't seeing that. Well, I take that to heart. It's a very interesting insight. I mean, I think that's partly why I really went into the art circuit, the whole national circuit of painting at national events, because I wanted to push myself. I loved art school. And, you know, if you go to one of these art events, if you're lucky enough to get selected for one, it's like art school. You're with 20 other painters. Let's say the Forgotten Coast, for example. I've painted there many times. The Forgotten Coast and plein air is one of these major art events in the country, one of these great plein air events. And I've been to many of them in the last I didn't go, I'm not going this year, but I went for like 5 years in a row. And what happens is you've got 25 other painters and they're all really good. And the assignment of the week is to go out for the week and paint whatever you want to paint. And when you're done at the end of the week, you take your 7 or 8 or 10 paintings and we're going to have a big show. And then there's a party and people come in and they buy some of the paintings. And you get to talk to the other artists about the work they put on the wall and what part of town did they go to get that view. And it's all very exhilarating and it's extremely challenging. And I'm in a place, you know, at the time it was a place I'd never been. So it's like going to art school is my point. You're getting the assignment. You're getting the critique. You're getting better. You're learning more. And best of all, you're connecting to new people, a lot of people. And, you know, I make friends on these trips and I do as many of them as I can. As long as my knees hold up, I'm going to go to these. I love them.
Yeah, I understand the knee thing. I'm learning all about my joints as I'm getting older and what they can't do anymore.
Well, Che, I advice on that because I stand when I paint. I stand all day. I'm at my easel standing, which is by itself good. I try not to sit when I paint. But my advice would be have 3 or 4 pairs of sneakers that are slightly different. When your knee starts hurting, change your sneakers. Very often that cures the whole problem because a lot of knee problems and back problems are from posture. So if you can just get your posture right, and sometimes it's as simple as stand up straight and wear the right kind of shoes.
This wraps up part one of my interview with painter Mark Shasha. Part two is available now at PassionatePainterPodcast.com/episode 91. And don't forget to check out the show notes at PassionatePainterPodcast.com/episode 90 or 91 to see a slideshow of Mark's work, read his bio, and access links to his website and his amazing instructional videos. Don't forget to join my podcast Insider Circle for free downloadable ebooks, cheat sheets, and checklists. Exclusively for my podcast insiders and students. You'll also receive a reusable coupon for the lowest price available on all of my self-paced online courses. Sign up for free in the sidebar at PassionatePainterPodcast.com. Until next time, go make something.